Last day of the Thanksgiving weekend. For some people, that may be something to give thanks for. And let me say thank you to the, on Thursday, we did have a vegetarian, vegan Thanksgiving here at the center. Perhaps a new tradition. But I think one of the things that struck me was the harmony of the people here. Both in the, you know, all the planning, the setting up, the execution, the cleaning up. The people just, everybody just kind of stepped in, and it was kind of seamless. A good model for family life. How to work together, be together in harmony and awareness. So I wanted to, because this is the end of the Thanksgiving weekend, and I haven't really spoken. I don't think I've given a Dharma talk here for 3 or 4 weeks since gratitude is a core practice in the Buddhist tradition. I did want to take this opportunity so we could speak together about gratitude. And especially in these times. Again, as you've heard me, those who've been here before, you've heard me say Buddhism is a big picture tradition. Big picture tradition means it has a way of looking at life. It has a way of looking at the mind. It has a way of looking at sentient beings that helps us kind of understand more deeply what's going on and why things are going on the way they are, which then allows us, see, to respond to what's going on in our world, what's going on in our relationships, in a place that comes from understanding. And because it comes from a place of understanding, therefore we can act wisely, intelligently, compassionately in the world. But unfortunately for many people, that process is not how they do it. They kind of just respond to the situation and often respond to the situation from a very kind of He's the boss, you see. I can continue. Okay. And so before I get into thankfulness, gratitude, I want to help us see the bigger picture. Okay, it's important that we be able to see, have a perspective on life. In Buddhism, it's called view. And the capacity to have right view, as opposed to wrong view, is the basis then for action. And for many people, we go into action without really looking at our view. Or as we were saying earlier in the meditation, we enter the world, the so-called external world, without a real awareness of our interior world. That's why we get in trouble as individuals, and that's why we get in trouble as a society, and that's why we get in trouble as a world. So this is essential that we begin with the bigger picture. Of course, Buddhism has a lot to say about the big picture, which we won't go into. Totally. But let me just say a few things. For those who have been coming over these months, you know that we are, in our community, we're involved in two intensives dealing with the full awareness of the sutra, full awareness of the breath sutra, and the four establishes of mindfulness sutras. These are the four earliest teachings that the Buddha gave to his students about the practice of mindfulness. And so These teachings and the practices that you've been hearing over these past months and will continue to hear in terms of mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the breath, mindfulness of feelings, mindfulness of the mind, mindfulness of the objects of mind, etc., kind of describe what it means to be a human being and how we are connecting to the world. See, it's like it's a whole piece that most of us aren't even aware of, that to be a human being, and each of us as individuals are human beings, and the world is made up of human beings, and this human being, this is our fundamental connection with each other. This is what makes us all the same. You see, before we move into the world of difference, we have to begin with the world of sameness. Unfortunately, in our world these days, we begin with difference without a sense of sameness. Right? Is that clear? We begin with the world of making distinctions. We begin with the world of individual identities without being aware of the identitylessness of really what it means to be a human being, which really allows us to experience and see our interconnection rather than our disconnection or separateness. So without this fundamental grounding in the way things are, that is revealed to us through the practice of mindfulness, without really understanding who we are, and how we come into the world. You see, we come into the world through our five senses and our mind. That's how each of us, every one of us, come into the world. We see things, we hear things, we smell things, we taste things, we feel things in our body, and then our mind begins to think about things. And in relationship to how it thinks about things, it begins to generate emotions. And emotions begin to generate actions. And actions begin to generate more thoughts. And, you see, and it all unfolds. And so over years, we're all out here in how it's unfolding, but not really attending to what's actually going on in myself as a human being, which of course means what's going on in everybody. So these learning to establish ourselves in mindfulness and to be aware of what's going on in our bodies, what's going on in our mind, what's going on in the realm of the senses and how we're connecting to all these things we see and smell and taste, because that's what we're doing, you see? When you're reading the newspaper, when you're watching TV, when you're surfing the internet, when you're talking with another human being, those are all arising through the senses as the mind connects with the world. And if we're not aware of whether that connection is a true connection, or where there is a faulty connection, a skewed connection, right? You can see problems can occur, both in our own most immediate personal life, but especially these days in the life of the world. So again, please understand that the practices that we're learning about mindfulness in the realm of the body and the breath and the feelings and the emotions and the mind and the objects of mind is not just some kind of esoteric meditative experience. It is the fundamental capacity to live an intelligent life, right? And to be able to see clearly what is really going on and not what people are telling you is going on, or not very often what your mind is telling you what's going on, which again for most of us has become a faulty receiver because we have not learned from childhood how to keep our receiver clear. All right, so mindfulness, concentration, this attending to the interior world is essential, and usually we deal with this every week, so let me just go on. Now, what about this world out here? Right? What's going on in it? You see? What's the big picture? See, the big picture is historical. You know? What's history? Is it the history of our country, which is a couple hundred years old? Is it the history of civilization, which is maybe thousands of years old? Is the history of human beings? Is it the history of the earth? The history of the solar system? Is it history, you know? What history, what's the context in which we see this unfolding of this moment, you know, in life? You see, if we don't see the big picture, we can make really very erroneous assumptions about what's going on. And again, it's all in the service of acting wisely and intelligently in this life. So again, it was these types of fundamental questions that the Buddha kind of asked himself 2,600 years ago, like, what's really going on here? Everybody aware of that question? Maybe many people here have asked that question. But again, he asked that question deeply. And he moved in a very personal direction. Even though he was in a society, and even though he had a place within the caste system and the class system, and he had a place within a complex society, the questions he asked were more about what's really going on here in human life. And one of the things he discovered was impermanence, change. You know, that human beings are not here forever. That everybody actually is here for a very short time, and even that short time that we are alive is an unfolding movement that goes from birth to death, right? And that the life of the body, which begins at birth and ends at death, also is conditioned by a constant changing, aging, prone to sickness and disease, right? That this was also very much part of this unfolding of what it means to be a human being. And he thought that this was quite extraordinary. You see, it wasn't like just an intellectual, Because in a certain way, these things are obvious, right? I mean, everybody would say, oh yeah, people are born, people die, I understand that. Along the way, there's sickness, old age, and, you know, okay, I understand that. But he was like, oh no, this is big. You see, because if this body is just temporary and is prone to all these kind of impermanent changes and eventually is going to die, then having a life just focused on taking care of the well-being of the body and the indulging of the body as the focus of life totally doesn't make sense, right? And when he looked around and said, well, and all the things that we accumulate and all the things that we strive for and all the relationships we have, they're all impermanent and temporary too, and everybody is subject to change too, then making that the sole purpose of life also seems to kind of be missing the mark, right? As well as he saw that, you know, just a lot of changes, ups and downs, back and forth, success and failures, things going our way, things not going our way. And, you know, he kind of went, woo. So this is the way things really are, right? And so kind of seeing this whole conundrum, he began to kind of look more deeply into life. You know, is there more than this? And of course, for those of you familiar, won't go into it, he looked deeply into his mind, and he came to realize that there was another whole way of being, another whole way of living, another whole way of experiencing life, another whole way of relating to the objects of the senses, the things we see, smell, taste, touch, and even the realm of our thoughts, that produces a state of well-being, of ease, of joy, and that allows us to enter the world of impermanence and change in a very even, wise, intelligent, compassionate, empathic way. Right? But to do that, one has to kind of enter through a transformative process where we begin to act from the way things really are than the way things people think they are. Okay, so that's kind of the spiritual life. Okay, that's the Eightfold Path, right? But with a clear understanding that as long as people don't see that, and especially as long as people are devoted single-mindedly to themselves and the satisfaction of the needs and desires of their individual self, there will always be suffering. Because that is the cause of it. Right? Now, if you extrapolate that to being a single human being, and you times that by 6 billion, right? And again, these 6 billion people were not always 6 billion. They were a lot less than those 6 billion. And they actually, you know, were kind of scattered about, right? And in their scattering about, their capacity to act out in an unintelligent, in harmful way to intensify their, not their own suffering, but suffering of others, was kind of contained, somewhat limited. But again, in our technological and human advances, we have created the basis for what? Kind of one world. Which, if this one world was being lived by people of awakened minds and who really understood their interconnection with each other and could really coming from a place of wisdom and love and understanding, that could be quite wonderful, couldn't it? The capacity to really create a wonderful world with each other. But unfortunately, because that inner world, that inner misperception, that fundamental ignorance has never been dealt with other than just a small part of society, that interconnection through modern technology just allows what? Ignorance and delusion and affliction just to be intensified immensely. Right? So that is why today, even more so, and again, we know that in our own country, you know, that that this inner world has to be attended to. If it's not attended to, if it's not taken care of, if people don't begin to wake up and understand who and what they truly are and who and what they're truly not, you know, the basis for more suffering and delusion, denial, etc., will increase. Why is the world the way it is? Because of causes. Because of causes. The Buddha taught cause and effect. So we don't have to be lost in, I can't believe this is happening, or this shouldn't be happening, or why is this happening? It's all because of causes. When you understand causes, you'll understand why things are arising. If you want to change things, you understand I have to change causes to create new effects. It's kind of a simple process. But again, it allows, with this kind of what I'm setting out here in a very simplistic way, is again allows us to enter the world with you know, what's called realistic expectations. Right? Is that a kind of a psychological, you know, realistic as opposed to unrealistic expectations? Many of us enter the world with unrealistic expectations for ourselves, for those around us, for the whole world, but we want to have realistic expectations. We want to enter the world with an understanding of reality, how it really is, so we can act again wisely, intelligently, and be efficient and effective in our actions. Okay? Anybody not with me up to now? Yeah, it's kind of simple. Is it a little warm in here? How's everybody doing? A little warm? Maybe a little AC? What? No AC. Yes, AC. So you see, this is how it begins. You see? And if there's attachment to views, if there's attachment to the custom, you know, to our body and its comfort, you know, we could all of a sudden what? Have problems. And this is like over, you know, 30 minutes of comfort or discomfort. So you can see it's and again, none of us are armed, hopefully. Right? You know, the possibility of creating great harm isn't that present here, but you could see it wouldn't take much, would it? Is that interesting? We wouldn't resolve anything on that matter. So, having set out to you the bigger view, having set out to you the interior meditative life, I want to share with you some, maybe we just open some windows, get some fresh air in here. How about fresh air? This is Florida in its best, right? The air is fresh, the air is cool. Let's get some. Yeah, that's better. So, big interior view, understanding the bigger view. Now, how do we relate to what's going on in the world? Now we're kind of what's called, where we're talking about our actions in the relative world. The relative world is the world of daily life. It's a world of up and down. It's the world of Republicans and Democrats. It's the world of good and bad. It's the world of right and wrong. How do we act in the world where things are discriminated, right? Where things are relative to each other. You know, how do we relate to this everyday world, especially what's going on in the world today? So I want to share with you and many of you who've been around over the time know that we've had a lot of intensives and teachings in the past on the mind trainings, the slogans that are generated by the great Indian teacher Atisha, who came to Tibet many, many, many centuries ago. And I'm looking at this book, The Great Path of Awakening, the classic guide to using the Mahayana Buddha slogans to tame the mind, awaken the heart. And again, lots of teachings and practices on this. So I want to read from the section that is called The Transformation of Adverse Conditions into the Path of Awakening. Okay, so there are many people in this room, in this society, who believe that there's a lot of adversity in the world today, and that there are a lot of adverse conditions in the world today and in our country today. Okay, so these teachings that are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years old are about this very situation. Okay, when evil fills the world and its inhabitants, change adverse conditions into the path of awakening. So this is a very profound instruction for all of us. Because for most of us, right, we don't like adverse conditions, right? There are many people in this world, let's say in our country, that after the election felt that they have now entered a world of great adversity. Is that true? Okay, please remember that 8 years ago, there's another whole population in our society who felt they were now entering a world of adversity and adverse conditions. Okay? So all we do is kind of share that. But we all share adversity. Adversity is something that basically we don't want to happen. Right? We think should not be happening to me, to my loved ones, to my country, to the world. We call it adversity, and we see adversity as an obstacle, right? But this says, when evil fills the world and its inhabitants. Now, evil is not the biblical evil. Okay, this is a translation. Evil means delusion. Evil means, in Buddhism, egocentricity, self-centeredness, and the delusions and the afflictions that come from that self-centered, egocentric way of living. When that fills the world and its inhabitants, right, and all the manifestations of egocentricity in terms of greed, etc., enters the world, and not caring about other people, and lack of empathy. I mean, these are all the evil that fills the world. When this fills the world and its inhabitants, who are its inhabitants? All of us. Change adverse conditions into the path of awakening. This is important, because we think our challenge is to get rid of the adverse conditions, right? If there weren't these adverse conditions, I wouldn't be so upset. Right? Why am I upset? Why am I angry? Why am I despairing? Why am I anxious? Because of these adverse conditions, right? No. That's not right. And I can tell you they're not right, because for all your adverse conditions, let's say coming from this election, there's another whole sector of society that sees those adverse conditions as very positive. So there's nothing inherently adverse in anything. It is a judgment, it is a perception that we have to realize comes from our minds. Now, I'm not saying that things that go on in the world don't have consequences, that we don't make choices, that we don't take stands. I'm talking, and what they're talking about is our minds. Because as we started earlier, we want to act in the world from a place of understanding and intelligence and compassion, right? So it says here, when adversity fills the world and its inhabitants, take adversity as the path of awakening, not an obstacle to awakening, as the path to awakening. Now, what is a path to awakening? What is it that we want to awaken? See, that's important, right? So if I'm going to transform adversity into a path of awakening, what do I want to awaken to? What am I trying to awaken within myself? Well, I'm trying to awaken clear seeing. I'm trying to awaken understanding. I'm trying to awaken compassion. I'm trying to awaken loving kindness. I'm trying to awaken generosity. I'm trying to awaken patience, right? Right? These are the kinds of things that I want to awaken in me, Right? When we're on a path of awakening, it's not some abstract, generic path, is it? No, it's an actual path that is awakening things within my mind and spilling out into actions of my speech and my body. Right? So, if I understand that what is called adversity is simply something happening. Is that clear? That's all. Adversity is just something happening that I am calling aversive. Right? The thing, whatever is happening, doesn't call itself adversity. Does it? No. It's just something happening. We label it aversive. Why do we label it aversive? Because we don't want it to happen. Right? Things we want to happen, we label good, positive. Right? And we forget that these are just labels. So when we as individuals have a situation that we begin by labeling aversive, how do I transform my response into an awakened response? Well, it means that I am using that situation in my life, within myself, within my society, to awaken within me understanding of cause and effect, understanding of why things arise the way they do. If I want to change something, maybe I got to change the causes, then it changes the effects. I'm trying to awaken again my patience. I'm trying to awaken my empathy, right? Because, people that we think are causing adversity in our society or to ourselves, do we like them? Do we like them? Are we empathic to them? Do we really care about their sufferings? No. We care about our own. Isn't that true? Yeah. How do I awaken true empathy? Right? How do I really awaken my capacity to understand others, especially others who don't happen to see life the way I do? Now, we live in a very diverse world. Anybody notice that? I mean, people are just all over the place these days. They're into all kinds of things, aren't they? Yes. It's wild out there. And it's not getting better, is it? No. And that's the way it is, isn't it? Isn't it? I mean, we're all looking at the same world. I mean, that's real, isn't it? That's really what's going on. Why is it going on? Causes and conditions. How can I be in disbelief about reality? How can I not accept reality? Because it's reality. That's what it's called. Okay? Traditional people who don't want to live in reality, we call them crazy. Except when it's us. Right? Which is really crazy. So again, this teaching, I do want to take a little time to take questions. This teaching about when adversity fills the world, take adversity as the path of awakening, is a key teaching that we should plant on our foreheads. So we are not thrown by adversity. We are not put into a state of fear by adversity. We are not put into a state of anger and rage by adversity. We are not put into a place of sadness and despair by adversity. We know how to transform it into something positive so we can act wisely and intelligently and compassionately and empathically in the world if we care about the world and we want to make it a better place, which I would imagine many people in here do. That's why you're here. Okay, so before, let me, there's another, getting to Thanksgiving. There is a slogan that I love deeply. It's only four words. It says, be grateful to everyone. This is a profound teaching. Be grateful to everyone. So these trainings, such as the one I just met, and the whole, all of them, are made to be little pith trainings that one can use to guide one so one can act in the world in an awakened way. They are the words of awakened teachers who have shared the way they perceive things. In Mahayana Buddhism, we call that the bodhisattva mind, bodhicitta. The awakened mind. And so awakened people have shared with us how they view things. Be grateful to everyone. Not be grateful to some that I choose. Not be grateful sometime and not other times. Not be grateful to this situation but not that situation. It says, be grateful to everyone, everything. That reveals in that slogan the Buddha mind. When that Buddha mind enters the world of relativity, when the Buddha mind enters the world of 21st century America, it's grateful to everything. Now again, most of us recoil at that because we go, what? Well, certainly there are a lot of things that I'm grateful for, but how can one be grateful for what? What? Adversity. How can we be grateful for injustice? How can we be grateful for war? How can, I mean, right? Come on. How can we be grateful for exploitation? How can we be grateful for climate denial? I mean, how can we, right? I mean, aren't you kind of rebelling against this? Yeah, let's get real here. This is not dogma, just to be. This is not spiritual pablum to go, oh, yeah. No, we don't like this at all, be grateful to everyone, do we? I mean, aren't there people in your life that you don't like? That you're not grateful to? Or am I the only one? Yeah, this is a high bar. This is the highest bar. And most of us do not want to jump that one, do we? Right? We want to lower the bar. Hey, Ken, I'm just learning to be grateful to the, you know, the people I live with, right? You know, that's, you know, that's where I'm at. Right? I'm still working on being grateful to my parents who gave me life. Right? I mean, be grateful to everyone? Yes. Be grateful to everyone. Because you know what? When you're, if you're dealing case by case, dealing with the people you live with, dealing with your parents, dealing with your relative, dealing with your work colleagues, dealing with the opposition, political, you know, it'll be endless. You'll be working on this one forever. And since life is short and unpredictable, you will not get to the end of it. And if you believe in future lifetimes, you'll just be doing it next lifetime. You'll be working this one forever. case by case. When you're grateful to everyone and everything, it includes everybody you live with, everybody you work with, includes your parents, includes all your relatives, okay? You see, when you get that one, then you get it all. Then it's easy. It's big picture. Dharma is big picture. Ego is small picture. It's a tiny little frame. And most people are living in a tiny frame. This is big. This opens it up. This shows you a different way. So how does one be grateful? Again, we understand, grateful for the nice weather, grateful for friends, grateful for loving people, grateful for people who agree with me, grateful for sundowns, grateful for puppy dogs, you know, grateful for, right, for babies, you know, there's lots of, see, that's easy. Okay? You gotta raise the bar. How can we be grateful for all the adversive things and people in the world? Yes.
Fred, could you help me to be grateful for a person who is likely to harm a lot of other people in the world?
So the question is, how can one be grateful to someone who's doing harm to the world, or you perceive they're going to do harm, right? Again, it's not saying that there aren't human beings who do great harm, have done great harm, and continue to do great harm to the world. But also, we can never be totally sure, right? That's one thing, right? We don't know how things unfold. Right? There are many people in this room who've had situations in their life that were harmful. And yet you look back on that and you go, what? If that hadn't happened, I wouldn't have changed my life. I wouldn't have turned things around. I wouldn't have, right? So it's a big picture, you see? And like you said, to become aware that there are people who may do harm to the world by their actions brings out in you what? Or hopefully will bring out in you what? No. Well, I mean, maybe for 5 minutes. You know, yeah, maybe a little hit of anger at injustice for 5 minutes is good. But the world doesn't need more anger, does it? The world has plenty of its own. I mean, have you noticed it? I mean, the world doesn't need more anger. The world needs more what? Yeah, I mean, if you become aware that there are people who have the capacity of doing great harm in the world, then that should awaken in you what? Beatrice. Well, and also a desire in yourself to create a world and to take actions that support and nourish life. And to protect those that are maybe being harmed. Right? You see? And without that, I mean, Beatrice might just be, you know, going through her life, enjoying the weather in Florida, and, you know, but all of a sudden she touches that awareness of there are people doing harm to other people. There are people in harm's way, and that awakens her up with her compassion, sense of connection, and perhaps action. That's good. You've taken something that was aversive, and you've used it to awaken something positive within yourself. Okay, that's what that means. It's not like you go, oh, you know, I'm grateful to all the tyrants of the world. Long may they live. No, it means I am aware that there are tyrants in the world, but I understand the causes and conditions that produce them and support them. Right? I understand the suffering, the ignorance, the delusion, the greed, the, you know, that under that underlies that. And I want to rid the world of it. Right? And voting them out of office does not rid the world of them, unfortunately. Because people are not the problem, as Thich Nhat Hanh said. We are all brothers and sisters. It is ignorance that is the problem. As Gandhi said, hate the sin, not the sinner. Right? And we live in a world where it's all about people. So much easier to hate the person than really see what's underlying it. That's what we, if we want to hate something, hate intolerance, hate bigotry, hate greed, hate narcissism. I mean, those are good things to hate, if you're going to hate. But we end up hating people. Does that? Yeah. Be grateful to everyone. You know Shantideva, the great 8th century Buddhist, you know, his, if you've never read it, The Path of the Bodhisattva, one of the great classics of world religion, Shantideva. In his section, one of his verses, and it's all in verse, and it really lays out the whole Mahayana teachings, he says, in terms of this, he says, yeah, it's good to have Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and great beings to inspire us and ennoble us, you know, on the path. But don't forget your enemies. Don't forget the people who give you a hard time. He said, they are equal to the Buddhas in encouraging your development, right? How are you going to learn? How do we learn to be patient people if there weren't people or situations in the world that triggered our impatience? I mean, how would you develop patience? You see? You know, if you lived on a desert island all by yourself, you might see what? Gee, I am the most patient person in the world. Right? You know what I mean? Nothing bothers me. You know, until somebody else shows up. Then watch. Right? It'll begin, won't it? You know, how do you develop patience unless with people that you're impatient to? Right? How do you develop empathy unless there's a whole bunch of people that you're not empathic to? I don't want to feel their pain. I don't want to acknowledge their suffering. And yet we call ourselves, oh, I'm an empath. I'm a very empathic person, right? I mean, how do you develop compassion? How do you become a compassionate person if there aren't people in the world that you don't feel compassionate for, right? How do you develop understanding if there's a whole bunch of things that you go, I can't believe this. I can't believe this person did that, or I can't believe these persons say that, or I can't believe, right? I mean, how can you live in our country and not understand why there's such a thing as climate denial? Isn't it obvious? Right? I mean, you know, we've turned denial into an industry. We're in denial about everything. Right? I mean, climate denial is just another on the list of obvious things that we are in denial of. Because we're too busy what? We're too busy what? Consuming, enjoying our own pleasures, living for today, accumulating. Right? We're too busy. Right? We're too involved with things. Right? So we're, I mean, you know, as Thich Nhat Hanh said, he said, how can you expect the world to deal rationally with what they're doing to the planet if they can't even, you know, the suffering of the planet, if they're not, if they're in denial about their own personal suffering. Right? People in denial about their own personal suffering. Does anybody think our president-elect is a happy human being? No, he's driven. He's just crazy, right? I mean, somebody who is not capable or in denial about their own suffering, their own delusions, how are they going to come out and see the suffering of our planet and the suffering of other beings? Not easy, is it? No. So we have to kind of come out of our own denial. We're so good about seeing other people's. You know, is everybody here 100% present to their own delusions, their own sufferings, their own obsessions, their own ruminations? Is everybody here clear, wise, awake? Nobody wants to raise their hand, eh? Yeah. And yet we're furious that there are people in the world in denial. Right? Denial rises out of something. And it is not something that none of us know. There's not a person in here who doesn't know narcissism. Narcissism means what? I'm focused on meeting my needs. That's my world. Is there anybody here who thinks they're totally absent? Narcissism has been totally absent in their life? I mean, and then we go, I can't believe. Narcissism. Narcissistic individuals. Yes.
So you're telling us what the to have bodhicitta and to be peaceful and to be, but how do we do this? How do we be grateful for people that may do conversion therapy on days? How can I be happy?
Hold on. Hold on. Be grateful to everyone is a way to enter the world and the way things are. So you're saying convergent, oh, that's where...
Depends. We're talking about convergent
there. Oh, okay. All right. So what is that about?
I don't know.
would you say it's ignorance? Would you say that it's ignorance? Okay, so that's one. It's ignorance. Is it self-righteousness? Is it intolerance?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. There we go.
I have compassion for that.
Well, we have to have... No, first we understand that that's what that's about. Okay? You know, the human being is just somebody who's been taken over by that. See, it's widespread. Right, it's like the flu. You know, you're exposed to it. Right, and obviously, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh, call me by my true names. Everybody know that great poem of his. You know, and he says, you know, I am the boat person, and I am the pirate who is attacking the boat person. Right, I mean that's a big mind. Right? I am the young woman being raped, and I am the rapist. I am the frog, and I am the mayfly. That's not approval. That's understanding that causes and conditions have brought that person to where they are and why they are doing what they're doing. And it's the understanding that, again, I don't really know much about our vice president-elect, but I can assure most of us in here, if we've been brought up as a baby in that home, raised the way he was raised, had all the experience he had, we would be saying the same thing. It's causes and conditions. It's not that we approve, but we understand. And then the question becomes, well, how do I change that? How do I change the causes and conditions that produce that kind of way of looking at life, you see? That's our challenge. So when we act in the world, we don't just act with more Because what's the other, what's everybody else doing? You know what, that only makes things worse. Okay? We have about 5 minutes. Any questions? I mean, this is big. Be grateful to everyone. Big, high bar. But then when you live your life by the high bar, then it's simple. It's not case by case. What do I do in this situation? What do I do in that situation? How do I respond? No. It's always the same. Yes.
I'm just thinking of an example personally recently of feeling a lot of anger at someone in a work setting.
Could be.
For a long time. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering about what be grateful for everyone looks like.
Okay.
For me personally, for example,
let me just stop because I know Brian, you know this is being live streamed. Okay, so Laura's beginning by saying, let me give you a personal situation, somebody, a work situation, they've screwed up a lot, made mistakes, done things, all right, and there's a lot of anger in you toward this person. Okay, continue.
Yeah, so what does the gratitude for everyone look like in a, just bringing it down to just one sample, not even...
Yeah. It's really the
same.
It's the same.
It's
the same.
Does it look like being able to say, okay, I'm grateful for the lessons I learned in this situation? Is that the same thing as that? Or is it just about compassion for the causes and conditions that make this person despicable? I mean, that's
all right, but let me ask you a question. Does this person see themselves as despicable? I mean, if they were here, would, if they said, you know, are you a despicable person and do you always act despicably, what do you think they'd say?
No.
No. How do they see it? How do they see it? What would they say? What would they say?
They would say that they've...
Yeah, come on, it's hard, isn't it?
Well, I'm just giving opinions on what he's probably thinking.
All right, but again, this is called understanding.
Yeah.
Understanding is the capacity of understanding somebody else from the inside. It really is hard because we got to let go of just what this, you know, this is despicable. This person's despicable. What they did, you know what I mean? It's like to let go of our own story about the situation and be willing to enter into, again, it's not with approval. People go, ooh, but I don't want, no, it's not approval. It's understanding. So if I said to you, this person from their point of view, nothing to do with you, from the way they see the world, they operate in the world, the way they see themselves in the world, what would they say about themselves in the situation you're talking about?
That they probably made some mistakes, but that they're a good person, and they believe that they did the best thing they could do.
Okay. Could that, from their point of view, be true? Just from their point of view? If you were in their body, in their skin, in their mind, in this situation, can you understand why that is a perception that person could have? Now, when you do that, and you let that come into you, this is not approval, don't worry. Okay, this is just understanding. What happens to that anger and hatred for this despicable person?
Lessons for a human.
Yeah. Well, you gotta, Laura, you gotta work it. You know, it's not just a one-time affair. You gotta work it, right? But you see, we want to hold on to our self-righteous. If we want to be right, and we want them to be wrong. But again, the situation is. I mean, this is life. Laura, you paying close attention? Pay close attention. There are people in this world who do not run their life on the same agenda as you. And there are lots of them. And that's the way it is. And if you go into the world thinking that your way of doing and blah, is the only way or the right way, you're going to be either angry a lot or despairing a lot, you know? Okay? But that's... No, the world is filled with all kinds of people. I mean, in this room, everybody thinks that the way they think sees things is the right way. And this is like, you know, 60, 70, 80 people. Luckily, they're all quiet now. Right? But, I mean, this is the way it is. It's not good or bad. It's not right or wrong. It's just the way things are. And if we want to be in the world and we don't want to be angry or scared or sad or, you know, all the time or up and down, we need to be in the world as it is. Now, it doesn't mean that this person you're working with or works for you or something doesn't have to be dealt with. Okay? This is not like passivity, but it means when you act from intelligence. You act wisely and skillfully. And to do that, anger is not the emotion you want to have in your mind, because when anger is present in your mind, whew, as you know, right? And obviously this is a situation that has to be dealt with, right? Who's going to deal with it? Yeah. And the question is, how do you want to deal with it? From anger? I mean, if you think about, you know, if you step back and think wisely, if you get out of Laura for a moment, step into like bigger picture, does Laura have to deal with the situation? You've got to be third party. Does Laura have to deal with the situation? What sort of mindset would you like her in to deal with it?
Calm and strong.
Calm and strong. Clear. So it's like that. Understanding doesn't mean you don't act, but understanding means you act from intelligence rather than from emotionality and from self. It always gets us into trouble. I mean, if you really think this person acted despicably, I would say then this person's self was maybe too present in their actions. Right? There's another slogan that says, drive all blames into one, the one being the self. And if we want to look to the root of so much that's negative in the world, it's just selfishness, self-centeredness. So why don't we stop here? Be grateful to everyone is the slogan of the day.